can imagine.
Hey there, I'm so glad that you're joining me. Thanks for being here. You're going to be glad you're here. Let me tell you why. Because I get the privilege to talk to someone who is not only, let's see, a poet, a songwriter, a rapper, an industry changer, an innovative person who has brought life to what could be considered a dying genre, really, within particularly faith-based circles, but really on a broad spectrum as well. And so, you know, there's so many layers to this guy. And more than all of that, I am a mom of some kids who have fallen in love with the Lord and with faith because of the work of Lecrae.
Wow.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you're here. It's good to talk to you.
It's awesome. It's a privilege.
It's good to see you. I feel like I know you because I'm in the car with the boys, and I mean, they got the bass going, the windows down. It's just Lecrae everywhere we go.
Thank you. Thank you to your boys.
Yes, they love you. And so tell us where you are right now. People want to know where you are, what you're doing, what's happening in your life presently.
Man, I am I'm 100% right now in tour mode, in album mode, in daddy mode. So,
how are you doing that, tour and daddy at the same time?
So what I do is every break, while the team may ride on to the next city on the tour bus, I fly home to give my wife a couple days off. And
Good job.
Yeah, so it's a task at hand, especially when you used to staying up super late on a tour and then you come home, wake up, take kids to school, make breakfast, and so. But it's been a blessing, you know, and I know it'll pay off its dividends in the end. So
cool.
So yeah.
Well, if you are not aware, Lecrae is a Grammy Award winning.
That happened.
I mean, let's be clear.
That happened.
It happened. It happened not just once.
Two times. Yeah.
Grammy Award winning rapper. Now I hear you're a little bit opposed to the Christian rapper label. And why is that?
So I am a Christian.
Yes, you are.
And a Christian is an incredible noun. You look in the Bible, there's Christians in the Bible. But sometimes it's a confusing adjective.
Yeah,
so sometimes when you put it in front of something else, it can. What does it mean? You know, does it mean that you're going to agree with the content? Does it mean that the content is going to be God-honoring? What if the song is about marriage? How does that work? And so for me, I feel as if there's some due diligence that needs to be done in terms of using that word as an adjective a lot of times.
Do you think it pigeonholes you? Like it makes people put expectations and a label around what you're going to do and what you're going to present to them that kind of puts you in a narrow bracket?
Sometimes, absolutely. So it's happened plenty of times before whereas I think there's an expectation. A lot of times people think if you say it's Christian, it's for Christians. So there's nothing beneficial for me if I pick this up because I'm not a Christian. And I would say, no.
Yeah,
you know, the air you breathe was given to you by God, and you love that air. I know you do.
Yeah.
So there's something for you. There's some common grace, and that common grace I extend in my music, and I want everybody to be able to, you know, absorb it and for it to, you know, to be effective for whoever listens.
How do you think you've been able to cross the spectrum from sort of a Christian pocket and a Christian niche over into this secular, you know, appreciation that people have for you?
Sure.
Because very few people that kind of start in this pool of faith-based, whether it's writing or whether it's singing or rapping or whatever, very few people are able to kind of put a foot in both worlds and still maintain their level of integrity in their art and in their message. How do you think you've been able to do that? Why?
I think the reason why it's not, first of all, there's models. And I think a lot of people haven't explored the models. So you look at someone like Dr. Martin Luther King, who is appreciated by people outside the faith, but also is esteemed within the faith as well. And I think it's because there's not just a proclamative model, but an incarnate model, right?
Okay. So deep. That sounded so deep.
Explain that
for the regular people like me.
I think Christians, we have limited ourselves to just proclaiming and not being incarnate and living. Caring about the issues of our society. And the world sometimes will feel like all y'all care about is talking about what y'all want to talk about. Do y'all care about us? Do y'all care about our pains, our hurts, our woes, our struggles? What do you have to say about, you know, this issue of racism and segregation and systemic oppression? Do you have a voice on any of these things, or do you just want to come in and say, you know, your little trite sayings and speak Christianese to us? And what I think I've tried to do is speak about all the things that would affect people, you know, from all walks of life.
Yep.
But I'm just speaking about them from my worldview, from my perspective, which I would hope is lined up with God's perspective.
That's cool. And I appreciate your perspective, actually. In fact, I've got my hands on one of the very first copies. I don't even think they're going to let me keep this one. I'm not even supposed to actually have it.
That's the one that feels good.
They're loaning it to me. It's one of the first ones hot off the press. I tried to get them to let me have it. They will not let me have it.
We'll work it out.
I was going to let you, like, put the boys, my son's name, my name, my husband's name.
You said it now. It's out
there. I said it. I know. I just don't think they care. I think they're going to say, I think they still going to take it back. But this is one of the very first copies of a book that you have to get your hands on. Yeah. I actually got a hold of this last night. I've already read a huge portion of it.
Wow.
Completely captivated
by
the sense of mission in this book. Like, it's not just a memoir, but it's very clear that the reason why you are recounting where you've been is because you're trying to point the reader toward what your mission is, what your purpose is, that it's not just about good music, which, by the way, the music is good.
Thank you.
But it's not just about that. You're actually trying to accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would benefit people who just know you because they are listening to you or their teens are listening to you. I think it'd benefit people to hear a little bit about where you came from, because it wasn't all just roses and white picket fences. And you have a story to tell.
Were there any roses?
So just sort of in a nutshell, how does your story to becoming unashamed, which, by the way, I love that this is clever to me, because it's not just like you're unashamed of the gospel. It's kind of like you were ashamed and now you are un.
That's good.
You have been made unashamed.
You got it.
Was that the goal here?
Okay.
All right.
Good.
So tell us sort of where the shame began in your past.
Yeah.
And then how you got that little dash in there that made you unashamed.
Yeah. I think a lot of the, long story short, it's going to all come back to being abandoned by my father, right?
Okay.
My biological father. And I think every boy just looks up to their dad no matter what. Their dad could just be any kind of terrible person, but there's just something in you that looks at dad as this hero until you learn otherwise. And for me to not have my hero there and not have a good explanation or understanding of why, it made me feel like I was the problem. And I felt insecure. And so I'm constantly fighting for the approval of people and fighting for someone to validate me. Never having a dad to say, good job, son, I'm proud of you. You made it. This is what it means to be a man. This is how this looks. You grow up looking for that in every other place you can possibly find it. And, you know, for me, what it did was it made me ashamed of who I was if who I was didn't fit in.
Yeah.
If who I was.
So it's like you're always trying to negotiate. How do I fit into this pocket of people so I can be accepted and feel the love that really, even when you felt it, though, I remember reading about that. Even when you felt accepted, though, there was still a hole that didn't get filled because it's just a dad size hole.
Absolutely.
Needed a dad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And so you're wrestling, constantly wrestling, trying to figure that out. And you're finding anything you can to fill that hole.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's the irreligious way, and that's what I did. I chased the irreligious way of just, you know, the prodigal son, the partying, the drugging, the, you know, promiscuity, and just looking for it and trying to find acceptance and meaning there, and it wasn't satisfying. And then, you know, there's a religious way, too, that people try to fill that void that's not fulfilling.
Performance.
And it's performing for acceptance and having the mindset that if I just do better, God will love me more, the people of God will love me more, instead of understanding the grace of God and that I've been accepted already and it wasn't on account of anything I did, it was all on account of Him.
Yep.
And that really got me to a place of like, hey, I'm already accepted. What am I?
Yep.
I'm unashamed. Let me go ahead and be honest, because there's nothing anybody can do there's no condemnation for me, you know, now that I'm in Him.
So. And I have to ask you this, because as a mom of boys, so, you know, when I see you, I see my boys. You know what I mean? I see my sons. I see the hope that I have for them that they will have integrity and character as husbands and fathers and leaders later, that they will enjoy their craft, that they will be excellent in their craft. Mm-hmm. But I resonated so much and my heart was torn so much when I read about abuse that you suffered in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to talk about that a little bit, because really what I want to get to are a couple of questions about it.
Yeah.
One being, is there anything that could have been done around you to stop that earlier than it stopped? Your mother was very responsible after she found out about it.
Sure.
But is there anything that could have done that could have happened? So tell us just in a nutshell about the abuse, anything that could have been done to signify the people around you that it was happening and put a halt to it. And then how you break that cycle, physical, sexual abuse, how you break that cycle now as a dad Because you're so honest about, you know what, my wife sometimes has to put my anger in check because I'm just doing what I saw.
Right.
And so how do you break that so that it's not something that remains systemic in your, you know, your family line?
Yeah, I think one, well, the first thing is, I mean, you said it's systemic, right?
Yeah.
So there's a history there that dates way beyond me, that dates back to, you know, a family of sharecroppers and not having, you know, this family structure because families were split apart because people were sold to other plantations.
Yeah,
and so it keeps trickling down to where grandpa doesn't understand how to raise a family. And now there's 16 kids over here and there's all this stuff going on. And so this is this historic systemic cycle that keeps repeating itself over and over again. And so I think my mother's idea was, okay, I've got to break this cycle. I've got to figure this out. A lot of it was education for her and, you know, and just trying to navigate through that understanding. And I don't think there was much she could have done just because even she wasn't fully aware of the, you know, how this cycle had influenced family members and you know, friends around us. And so I don't think she would have even realized that. And, you know, it was a different time where people trusted each other. Here, take my kid, let him stay with you for the night. And it's stuff that, you know, I wouldn't have to have a background check for these days.
Yeah,
you know,
like, yeah. Because this is just like a 17-year-old babysitter.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
just helping your mom out
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Hang on to you for a little while.
Absolutely.
And a female babysitter, which is so interesting because I think people, we so play up in our culture the abuse of a male to a young female.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a very prevalent thing where there's a young male with a female who's taking advantage of that.
Yeah, and I've since talked to a lot of other guys who've experienced the same thing. You know, people make light of that, but it's a real thing that has long-term effects that I've experienced myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that moving forward, it's a conscious effort. And
and
for me, not having these models in place to see what it looked like to be, you know, brought up in a certain type of environment, I have to read books. I have to ask questions. I have to stop and ask married couples, hey, how's this? I'd stop and ask parents, you know, even, you know, stop and hear your husband talk a little bit and take mental notes and just constantly learning and realizing that you don't have it all figured out.
Yeah.
And there's a wisdom in a multitude of counselors. And that's what's helped me to break some of these cycles because I'm aware that they're actually cycles.
So what do we do? What do we do about these systemic issues, particularly in the African-American culture, Lecrae?
Yeah.
What is your message going to be to my three sons, to your own son, to all of these, particularly younger men that are listening to you, watching you, and, of course, integrity in your own life? Because, you know...
Yeah.
Like it or not, they're watching what you're
going
to, the kind of husband you're going to be, the kind of father, grandfather later on that you're going to be, and how you're going to handle this ministry, but really business and outreach that God has given you. But what do we do as a people, as a society, to try to break these horrible cycles, again, that plague our culture in general, but particularly African-American men? I think it's like 70 or 80%.
Yeah.
Our single-parent homes because our men are missing.
Right. Yeah, you know, some people call it post-traumatic slave syndrome, where you've got men who were never, you know, on a plantation. They didn't have to be responsible for their kids.
Right.
They were just used to breed them, go on and get some work done, have kids all over the place and work. As long as you're working, you're fine. And it's almost as if that mentality, that cycle, that systemic perspective is just trickled down.
Don't you think like people are using that as an excuse, though?
I think some people think that. I don't think everyone realizes how it's perpetuated in our own homes, in our own environments, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think people realize how it's perpetuated and how different time periods have given way to that being a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, you can name all types of the war on drugs. There's all types of different things that could bring in a reason to lean on that, right?
Yep.
But I think it's understanding who you are and understanding your identity is understanding that, you know, despite your circumstances, despite what, you know, society or culture that you grew up in, you are made in God's image, that you're an image bearer, that Ephesians 2:10, that God has created you for good works that he's already pre-planned.
Yep.
And you've got to understand that and walk that out. And a lot of the issue does stem from the church has to be the leaders in our society and our culture. We're the ones with, you know, this information and understanding where we come from and our value and our worth and our
meaning.
We've
got the answer.
Exactly.
Like the one true answer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where a lot of it has to come from. And unfortunately, in the Black community and African American community, the church, after the civil rights era, I feel like has been kind of silent for the last 30 years in terms of like being a voice in the community. It's kind of like, oh, just come to service and, you know, and so that silence has made people say, well, you guys have been quiet. Why should we listen now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I feel like the incarnate part has to take place. We've got to be visible. We've got to be present in the community for people to say, okay, this is a trusted voice that can tell me about being a father, being a husband, being a leader, and so on and so forth.
If the music was stripped away,
yeah,
no more music, who would you be?
I definitely, you know, the music is a creative outlet to express passions, express burdens, desires, pains, turmoils. I think I would probably be some sort of professor at a college or something like that. You
so
know?
You love teaching?
Yeah, I love shaping and influencing. So it's not so much the structure of teaching as much as it is shaping culture and looking for ways to shape culture into. I think college students are those young minds you can launch out into society who are just idealists, and they're going to take something and they're going to run with it. And so I would see myself in that realm some kind of way, being an influencer.
Well, what's next for you? What's next? I mean, you just dropped an album.
Yeah, put out Church Clothes 3.
Does it make me sound old that I just said album?
No, you're fine.
Do people still say that?
Well, technically it is an album.
It is an album.
Yeah, technically
Thank
it
you.
Is.
So I'm not old.
You're right.
Thank
you're
you.
Right.
Appreciate
you're
that.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so you just dropped an album.
Yeah.
And you're on tour.
On tour.
Okay.
You know, wrapping up the tour. You know, the book, you know, May 3rd is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
everywhere.
I heard Barnes & Noble has a hold on this. They just, like, can't wait to get it on the bookshelves.
Well, as long as people run in there and go get it from Barnes & Noble, we're in a good place.
By the way, there's some really, really great photographs in here.
I had to put, you know, I'm a product of the public schools. You know, I needed pictures in my book. You know what I mean? So...
That's amazing.
Yeah. And for all the millennials out there, we did an audio book as well.
You so did. That's
I'll,
great.
I'll read y'all bedtime stories because I know that's how they... but yeah, I really, I'm, you know, the book is an exciting piece and that's what's happening. And I'm back in the studio this summer working on a bigger full-length project. And I'm excited about that. So
that's so great.
Yeah.
And you didn't tell us your wife's name. What is her
Dara,
name?
Dara, like Sarah with a D.
And how long have y'all been married?
We are 10 years.
10 years married?
10 years. We had a big celebration.
Kids.
Three kids.
How old are they?
4, 7, and 8.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I read in here, it says underneath their picture that they are your priority.
Priority.
How does she know that? How does she know that she's your priority? Like, what does Lecrae do to tell his wife, to show his wife that she's the one? Yeah.
I mean, my wife enjoys quality time.
Okay.
And so
that's her love language.
Yeah, her love language is quality time, and she knows that's not mine. So, so for me to sacrifice my time,
do I dare ask you what yours is?
I'm like words of affirmation and service, acts of service.
Okay.
So yeah, so you know, hers is quality time, and for somebody who travels all the time,
that's huge. That's a big deal.
It's kind of like so, you know, for me to fly 6 a.m. flights back home when I just got off stage at 1 a.m. It's like, she's like, okay, I matter. I'm a priority. You know what I mean?
That's good. That's good.
So it's things like that. You know, we build the schedule around her and the kids. Every year we'll make sure nobody can touch family camp. You know, we take our family to camp and get refreshed. There's just some times nobody can touch our vacations and anniversaries and her birthday.
Yep.
And so it's just things like that where, you know, you make sure they're a priority. I prioritize. Some will say this is kind of selfish, but the way I try to look at it is I have to be healthy. So if I'm not emotionally, spiritually, and mentally healthy, I'm no good for them.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people will sacrifice their own selves for the sake of career and family and so on and so forth. But
and then they lose their family.
Exactly.
They're not healthy.
Exactly.
They have no sense of well-being and centeredness or soundness about themselves.
Exactly.
No relationship with God that's vibrant and fresh.
No intimacy to give out. And so you're empty.
Yeah.
And so constantly making sure that I'm taking time to be full. So that I can give back to my family. And then if there's anything left over, then the fans can have it.
Well, listen, I keep getting ready to end the interview, but I keep thinking of stuff to ask you.
Okay.
So you have a picture in here with your pastors.
Yeah.
I love that picture because I thought, here's this guy that has 2 Grammys, and he's still making sure and sees the importance of being under the covering. Mm-hmm. For a man to remain under the covering of another who he will submit to their authority, that's a huge problem,
big.
Too, with men of any culture, to just say, I'm not too successful that I don't need somebody that's over me that I'm going to submit to them. Why is that important to you?
Well, I mean, even that word authority, right? Like, when you think about it, an authority means, you know, you can't speak from a place of authority unless it's been given to you. And unless I submit to an authority, I can't speak with an authoritative voice. And so I think it's, one, this is part of the biblical framework.
It is,
submit
it?
To your pastors. And I think I'm more afraid of being a rogue out here, you know? I don't
like a loose cannon somewhere.
I just seen how detrimental that is for people.
Yeah.
And just to have great pastoral leadership that cares about me, that, you know, I know my wife is taken care of and is comfortable, and they're going to check in and make sure that the home front is safe. And then also not afraid to tell me I'm wrong, you know, and you need
check
that.
You.
Yeah. If I'm the type of person, tell me. I want to know. You know what I mean? Don't let me out. Don't leave me out here going.
Just looking crazy.
Right.
Just
sit me down and say, hey, you need to. No.
Yeah.
You need to.
That's good.
So,
that's so good.
Love it. Yeah.
Well, listen, I want to say bravo. I want to say bravo because you have represented well.
I'm grateful.
And you are influencing a generation of particularly, again, everybody, because I'm listening to you. My husband's listening to you. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of us that are influenced by your music. But again, as a mom of young boys, the fact that I know I can trust your music and those that are associated with you, and my boys can listen to it and know the words and know the songs and be influenced by them. We actually made them, by the way, sit down and look up the words to the song, not just be singing them, but look at the words, know what he's saying. There's a message in there that he's saying.
Wow.
Look it up so
That's
you can
big.
Talk to us about what he's trying to tell you.
That's big.
And so the fact that I can do that and know that there's going to be something of substance there for my
That's
boys,
huge.
I just say bravo, bravo.
Thank you.
And
means a lot.
We're all for you. We are
that
for
means
you.
A lot. It sincerely does. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank
grateful.
You.
Grateful. Really
of course.
Grateful.